hello, hello. Thank you all for tuning in to yet another episode of Justice League Revisited. It's the behind-the-scenes DVD commentary that we should be getting with this classic, brilliant show, and we're bringing it to you here now with some of the writers, artists, directors, and actors, of course. Joining me, the co-host of Justice League Revisited, as always, the voice of Wonder Woman, Susan Eisenberg. Hello to you. How are you?
I'm well, and as always, it's good to be here. I mean, this is like... This podcast is the gift that keeps on giving, at least to me, because I have enjoyed watching these shows. I mean, you know, the ones where I've seen some of them, like Maid of Honor, I've seen many, many times. It's my niece's favorites. And but some of these I have not seen in like 20 years. It's such a joy to revisit these. So, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I'm looking at these with fresh eyes, too, because, you know, I'll see these and I'll pick up stuff, especially now because I want to go into this.
Old?
I'm trying to,
old?
Well, I didn't want to say that, but now I'm...
Let me...
Hold on. My oatmeal's kicking in. Hang on. It's the Metamucil. But no, I'm looking at it now with fresh eyes because I want to have writers or questions for the writers and questions for... So I'm looking at it in a different nuanced way rather than just consuming it to enjoy it, which is very fun.
Right. And we have... guests on today that we need to consume. We had to consume it in a very special way because we have an actor and a writer. We've never done that before. Look at us.
I know.
Look at us pushing the envelope.
It's like
right?
we've been juggling knives this whole time and now we're tossing in a chainsaw. Here we go. This will be great. For those of you who are wondering, we are going to cover once again War World. We have episodes 12 and 13 in the story arc as it progresses, the sixth story overall. Absent from this, we have no Batman, we have no Wonder Woman, we have no Flash. It focuses on the other four members of the League. It was directed by Butch Lukic, written by Stan Berkowitz. Part one dropped on February 24th of 2002, with part two airing a week later on March the 3rd of 2022, didn't I? I meant 2002.
Yes.
So yes,
yeah,
I apologize. Yeah. 20, so more than 20 years ago, 2002. It's hard to say something without a 20 in it, as we are now in the 48th month of 2020. But we've got two guests. As you mentioned, we've got Hawk Girl herself, Maria Canals Barrera. We've got the writer, Stan Berkowitz, coming back for a second time. And it's going to be fun to talk to both of these people at the same time. It's going to be great.
It is. And it's, I mean, there's just something so special about having insights from the you know, the actor and then also the writer. It's like when we have the directors on, I mean, there's just, you know, it's so complimentary to hear how it came to be on the page and then how it came to be on the screen and how it came to life, the performance, I mean. And Maria is just I'm a huge fan of her and her acting prowess. You know, I embarrass her all the time because I think she's so terrific. And Stan, the man, huge fan of his as well. I mean, the man can write. Let's just say it. Let's just put it out there.
A lot of television. I was fortunate enough that Stan agreed to be on my radio show, and we got to talk a lot of his non-Justice League gigs, too, which was a lot of fun because he's just written so much stuff, and it's so cool to hear about, you know, the writing on this and this project and then live-action stuff, animation stuff, how he dovetailed from one into the other. So if you haven't had a chance to check that out, geekedmeradio.com, you can find that episode with me talking with Stan about his writing career in general in Hollywood. But it's great to have them on this because I love that we're able to narrow the focus right down to Justice League and just about the work they've done. The writers on this have been top-notch, the directors, the storyboard artists. We could almost do this show for the next 20 years with all the people I'd like to have on to talk about the breakdown of these episodes.
I know it's a huge list, and I was thinking about that the other day. It's a huge wish list. Some of them we'll get, some of them we may not, but we will ask everybody. You have to put it out there. I mean, even if somebody says, I'm going to take a pass on that. You know, I believe you have to ask. So I'm thrilled we asked, and I'm thrilled they said yes, you know, and let's get to it because this is going to be a great show.
This is the first time we've had two guests join us for a single episode, but it was great. We have our writer, Stan Berkowitz, and the voice of Hawk Girl, Marie Canals Barrera, on as well. Thank you both for taking time out of your day.
Thank you, James. My pleasure.
Glad to be here.
And of
course, how many responses did we get on social media when we mentioned that Stan and Maria were going to be on? I mean, seriously, if you had any doubt about your popularity, each of you, you should know that the questions, we had so many questions come in for both of you. And Maria, this is your first time on the podcast. So it's like, people have a lot to say about Hawkgirl. That's all I can tell you. I mean,
Are you going to ask those questions now during this?
Yeah.
We'll go through them.
Maybe not right now, but we definitely want to ask some of those because that's how we make it, you know, connected to the viewers, to the listeners.
Let me just say quickly, hello, Stan. It's so good to be here with you.
Oh, yeah.
Hello there. It's been almost 25 years. Last time I saw you was on Curb Your Enthusiasm, and you played the pregnant lady, right?
You were
pregnant at that point on that show.
I was truly pregnant with my second daughter.
Oh, okay. And Stan just asking about that, he said, was Maria pregnant during the taping of Justice League? And I said, yes.
Yes, both my pregnancies were during the 4 years of Justice League. And that's another reason why it's such a special project for me, among the many reasons.
And are the children named Diana and Shara? No,
Bridget and Madeline.
And neither one had wings when they came out, just to be clear. But that's so exciting because your kids have basically grown up and seeing you, Marie, and all these different projects that you've done. And I know one of your daughters is now singing and everything and performing. So she's got that your husband and you've got that performing blood in her. That's so cool.
That's right. And, you know, my younger one, who's 18 in college, she's actually started doing voice acting, and she already booked a part like immediately. So it's pretty cool. But the older one, yeah, she's a rock and roll singer, actress, actually she's also a screenwriter. She's writing her own pilot.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah, she's really smart doing it all, you know? If you've got the skill, go for it.
Yeah. That's and I have no skills at all, but that's okay. I'm living vicariously through all of you. With this show, especially this episode, War World, we just recorded our last episode. We had Carl on to talk about Jean and his role in this, you know, getting kidnapped and transported to a faraway place. But I love the dynamic in this one because we start to see the seeds between Jean and Shayera, is that the green girl, you want, not green girl, Hawk Lantern, we'll say, will be your shipping name.
Oh, right.
Hawk Lantern.
The shipping name.
We start to see the seeds of that.
When I saw this episode, we had already asked Carl to be on. And after we did that, I said to James, we need to get Stan and Maria. Because to me, this is a Maria episode. It's not technically, but man, do you shine in this episode, Maria. Mm-hmm. I thought you hit it out of the park. And I love that we get to see you and Phil really start with all the banter and like the seeds of that relationship and that dynamic really coming to the fore in this episode. So,
well, thank you. Thank you. I loved that episode. Both.
Did you have a chance to rewatch it?
Yes. Yes, I did. And I love the way that in the writing, how, you know, when you don't want something you want, you fight it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that was really brilliant, Stan, the way we argue and, you know, try to fight our attraction, and the bubbling starts happening in those episodes. I loved it.
And one of the questions we got on social media was, did you always know, was it discussed early in before the series that they were going to be together, that was always going to be a romance between the two of them? Or was that something that appeared to you and you thought, oh, that's an interesting dynamic between them?
I think it happened slowly when we saw who the actors were.
Interesting.
When we saw that the actors could bring it off.
Hmm. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
because there is that arc, the same we have with Bruce and Diana throughout, too. We see little hints of it at the beginning, but I loved all these beats that we had. And I love Maria, I'm not sure, and Stan, you can obviously speak to this as the writer, the classic line when they arrive in the second part, they're looking for, obviously, War World, and they get to that trash area where Drog is taken up, and Maria gets to say, "What a dump!" That classic line, obviously, you know, that we know from Beyond the Forest. That everyone does a Betty Davis impression. Does "What a dump"? I'll ask Stan. Was that line a homage to that? And Maria, when you got the line, any changes in your delivery?
Well, I wasn't thinking about Betty Davis. Okay. But yes, that is a classic line. No, I just played it for Hawk Girl taking in the surroundings. And I thought it was really funny when he says he's seen worse, and I'm like, I'll bet. Like, I'm really dissing him. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
Stan, yeah, it's combative.
Was that any kind of an homage, or am I reading too much into it? Just my literary.
No, you're not reading too much. I mean, that's such a famous line that you can't use it without knowing that you're referring to the Betty Davis line.
Yeah,
I'm glad I wasn't thinking about it, or I would have done an impression. What a dump! because I'm such a sponge. So, but I thought that was fantastic.
And it literally was a dump. I mean, it literally was a dump that they were in.
Right. Right. Didn't we have another episode recently that the character says it's going to be a bumpy ride? Fasten your seatbelt. It's going to be a bumpy ride. And I said, maybe Len we were talking to?
I think it was Len for Metamorphosis. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So some Betty Davis fans out there, including me.
With this episode too, we see, like I said, the beginnings of that. Maria, did you and Phil, when you're recording this, because I know you're always in a sound stage, you guys are all in the room, it's an ensemble thing. Did you and Phil have those moments, Maria, when you would talk and say, so what do you think? I mean, did you guys compare notes on what the two of you thought your reactions were and your chemistry between the characters?
No, it's better not to inform the other actor of what you think. It's better to have it come alive in the moment. In that real moment when you're exchanging the dialogue, it's much more exciting to not know what your partner's going to do or where they're coming from. So we would look at each other because it would add energy, which is so great that we were together in the booth. but no, we kept it really fresh and it was exciting. And he's such a, you know, I like him as a person and he likes me as a person. So it made it, you know, easier to like him even more.
And Stan, with the writing on this one too, obviously I was going back and looking through some of my Superman comics and we see Draga, and this is, you know, taken right out of the story there with Mongul and Draga. When you're writing this, were there parts like this episode where you kind of had to go back and look at some of the comic books, or did they say, don't worry about it, here's what we're doing, here are the beats, and just you covered it from that?
Yeah, the most of the episodes were inspired by various issues of the comics. And then, of course, we kind of modified them to make them make more sense to the contemporary audience that we were writing for.
And was there any special, this particular two-parter, was there anything you really, that stood out to you as the writer when you were kind of going through this and going over the story that's like, oh, this is like made this one more special somehow?
Well, the thing, you know, in looking at it last night, the thing, you know, I it's hard to remember some of these, you know,
going back 25 years.
But the thing that stood out to me most was the political aspect of it, the bread and circuses thing, you know, where everybody's just watching these meaningless, crazy killings in the arena.
Yes.
And it's allowed the government or the leader, Mongol, to basically just goof off and not do anything, not do anything constructive to help the people. And by the way, a few nice words about Eric Roberts as Mongol and William Smith as Draga.
Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent.
Both performances stood out to me. I met William Smith years and years before that when I was a journalist. I interviewed him for the LA Times and he had no idea who I was when he showed up to do the episode. Didn't remember the article, didn't remember anything.
Wow.
And he was drunk too.
Oh.
a woman he was with, I think it might have been his wife, explained that he had terrible back pain. Smith was an athlete, a obvious bodybuilder for a long time, and it gets to you. And he had terrible back pain, so he was medicating it inexpensively with a bit of alcohol. Mm. But in watching the show, there's no sense that he was incapacitated at all. I thought he did a great job.
No, yeah. I would never have known had you not told me that.
Yeah, he did a great job. I mean, I didn't even recognize him. He had aged so much. He was in his late 60s and somehow went on to live another 20 years after that. But I mean, his work really stood out, a great raspy voice. And I think it was Andrea who told me that when they called his agent because they wanted William Smith, the agent said, "Are you sure? Are you sure you don't want Will Smith from Fresh Prince?" No, we want William Smith. We want that raspy voice. And he was terrific.
That would have been a completely different take on Draga for sure if we had Will Smith as that.
It would have.
So, Maria, what stood out to you when you were revisiting this episode? I mean, because you hadn't seen it, I'm sure, in a few years. So what jumped out at you?
What Stan touched on, too, how the masses are distracted with senseless violence instead of the government doing what they're supposed to be doing. The whole gladiator aspect of it. The pure selflessness and courage of Superman. That's why he's my favorite. I mean, he's so classy. He's just, no, I'm not leaving my friend. I mean, there's nothing more attractive to me. Can I be attracted to a cartoon figure? Yes.
You wouldn't be the first, my friend.
He has so much honor, And I just love how he fought so hard. I love the adventure and the romance and the banter that I had with the Green Lantern. It's so funny because my husband and I were watching it with one of our daughters last night, and I voiced that old lady in the...
Yes, yes.
Mm. And I was like, hey, Superman, I just want Superman to win. And my husband was like, that's great. You. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. That was so much fun. I love when I got to do things like that.
There's just so much character. You've done a bunch of secondary voices because we've watched a bunch of the shows, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's Maria.
Yeah, those are so much fun, aren't they, when we get to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I just thought it was another wonderful two-part episode. Of course, I love the last line that Superman says, what matters is not how you die, but how you live. Because Draga was so obsessed. Draga, right? Draga.
Yeah.
He was so obsessed with his image, you know? That speaks to a lot of humanity, what things look like, what he represents, and he that was a beautiful character, you know, because he had his own warped sense of honor, and then he was restored in the end. It's just a fantastic episode.
And then our heroes leave the planet in complete anarchy. Their leader's gone. They have nothing. Do now?
Now the people have to restore it.
Right.
I always assumed that Draga took over.
It's their planet.
Yeah, Draga was now in charge because he kind of looks down at the crown when Superman hands it back to him. So I assumed that he would come in and kind of clean the place up, make it better, do what he could, I'm assuming. But yeah, overall, though, it's kind of like,
that's right.
Good luck to you guys. We're taking off from here.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll be at the Watchtower.
We talked with Carl about this, how I love Jean's humanity. And that's one of the things you see throughout the arc of the entire season is while he's probably, you know, obviously Superman's from Krypton, but he's attempting to assimilate and blend in with and try to have a normal life. Jean is this very alien, very unknown. Mm-hmm. And then we see episodes like this where he literally saves Superman because he's talking to the little old lady voiced by Maria. And he's like, no, he's a Superman. We have to, you know, save him, keep him, don't let the Mongol destroy him. And he becomes one of the most human of the cast, which I love that. When you're writing for something like that, Stan, when you're taking on this character and you want to show that arc, are these some of these beats that you draw inspiration from some other areas of characters who had that? Because I always think of Mr. Spock as the same kind of thing. He's very alien, and when he dies in Star Trek 2, Jim Kirk says, of all the souls I've met, he's the most human. Did you have
Hello, spoiler.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, spoiler.
From 1982, I apologize. But were there any things like that you kind of drew in when you're writing? It could be anybody. I mean, obviously Kal-El or Shiera or Jean.
But if you think back to the Star Trek show, you can't have someone who's that cold and mechanical all the time. You're always going to throw things against him to question that. And I think it's the same way with the Martian, because he can't just simply go on being that cold and distant all the time. It becomes almost a comical character. And you'll see that in some of the other episodes where they do little things to try to, and try to make him look more human. I think the writer, Mark DeMattis, J.M. DeMattis, did that bit where he becomes addicted to cookies.
Oreos.
Yes. Oreos.
Yeah, Oreo. Okay, y'all remember it.
Yep.
Good. Good. That's fun to do.
We always talk about.
Yeah, I remember that pained look on his face as he was watching Superman getting the heck beaten out of him. Yep. I really felt his affection for his for Superman, and that he was so pained because he couldn't do anything mm-hmm. without blowing his cover. It was really beautifully animated.
And when he stood up and said, "Superman," you know, "Superman," I mean, got the whole crowd on their. You know, it was really something else. I got to say, it was so emotional for somebody who didn't grow up watching these kinds of shows, revisiting this episode and seeing that and feeling those emotions when I was watching it. I mean, I got such a kick out of Maria and Phil because I'm so used to seeing them already involved. So this is the beginning of it. So it was really fun revisiting that. But the Martian Manhunter stuff, I just think he's such a fascinating character, and I love Carl Lumley so much. So that's, and then Superman, like Maria said, just a heartbreaker. He's so good. And people find him, the character, you know, boring to write for, challenging to write for. And it's like, it always makes me crazy because I think, you know, he's such a fascinating character.
I agree. There's too much cynicism out there.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's for one of the things with the kid. It struck me too. The kid who's going through after Superman beats Draga the first time, you know, they catch the kid drawing the S on the walls, and it's everywhere. And those of us who are comic book fans know the S actually symbolizes hope. It's actually the Kryptonian symbol for hope. And the fact that this kid's unknowingly writing this on the wall of this bleak, desolate place, I loved that touch.
Wow.
Stan, these are all Stan. So
a lot of this stuff I didn't think up. I mean, a lot of it was taken from the comic books. You know, it's more than an inspiration. We used a lot of the beats from the comics.
Terrific.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff in the comics. They're hard to adapt. In their entirety, word for word, but they're moments. They're huge emotional moments that you have to, you know, you can't help but use them. But you have to often construct a new story to fit in, you know, the stuff between them. That's the job of us, the job of the adapters rather than writers, I think.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, Maria. As you became more involved in the series, did you go back and read any of the comic books? Did you kind of like, well, you know, kind of pique your interest to go into those at all? Or was it just based on the scripts you got and the notes you got from the directors and the writers? And you kind of, that's how you informed your voice for Shiera?
Yeah, I did not. I wanted to operate completely with what was given to me. And that's where I extract everything from. And I did not grow up with a lot of comic books. I mean, I just knew a couple, you know, the most popular characters. So I love that I got introduced to all these characters with our show.
Yeah.
Mm. So when you auditioned for Hawk Girl, Maria, is it the voice that we hear in the series that you used for your audition?
Yes, because Andrea said to use ourselves, not cartoony or what we think a superhero is. So I used myself and I used the longing for I tried to match her longing for Thanagar and her people and her customs, because that was the material in the sides for the audition. So I tried to remember missing Miami, okay, where I'm from. And I'm like, okay, my heritage is Cuban. So I'm like, let me think about deep down inside of me, those Cuban things that I didn't even realize were such a part of me, you know, as an American Latin person. There are times when I'll see like a product that I remember from Miami that my grandmother would drink. And I'm like, oh, look, a Malta drink. I don't even like Malta drinks, but emotionally it would do something to me because I remember them sitting on my grandmother's fridge. So I tapped into that longing for my heritage and my hometown. And I really was able to emotionally get to those places and that longing, but yet I'm very courageous, like Shayera, to leave and start something new, you know, as an actor. So as an actor, you know, it's our job to bring out those parts of us that coexist with what the character's going through. And it felt really good. And I was so thrilled to get it. But during the show, as you recall, Andrea would have to remind us that we are warriors. So whenever I'd get a little too in my upper register and a little too, she would remind us, you're a warrior, especially being pregnant twice. I was like,
so, Maria, even in the point of the audition, you already knew that Hawkgirl was an alien who had left her home country, correct?
Yes.
Because when I started writing the scripts, there was one script that had that featured Wonder Woman and Hawkgirl. And luckily for you, you never read the comic books, but I had been reading them. And there are certain aspects of the comic books that are simply not very good. One of which is that the characters aren't very well delineated, especially in Justice League comic books, where you often feel that you could switch the word balloons from one to the other.
Wow.
And you'd still have the same thing. Susan, well, you've apparently read the comics, right?
Some, now I've read.
Here's the problem I ran into writing for both Hawkgirl and Wonder Woman in the same episode. I asked Rich Vogel, Rich, exactly how are these two women different? Because, you know, the voices seem to be the same and their backgrounds are kind of similar. One's a warrior who's far from home, and the other's a warrior who's far from home. So Rich said, well, Stan, let me put it this way. Hawkgirl's married and Wonder Woman isn't. Oh, okay, I get it.
And at the time, did you know you, because somebody asked on the internet, did Maria know the arc of her character before she got the script? And, you know, I love how they would assume that we would know the arcs of our characters.
We didn't know.
But no, we didn't. Oh, right. But at some point you knew. I mean, I remember, you know, Maria has shared, you know, when we've done panels and stuff, how shocking it was for her to read in the scripts what happens to that character of Hawkgirl.
Among the staff, the idea was gestating, much as Maria's daughters were. right at the very beginning, just that little spark, the little spark of life. But the whole thing hadn't been figured out at that point.
Oh, I remember thinking, oh no, why are they having me do this? And foolishly not realizing that it's such a wonderful, dramatic thing to happen and for me to be able to play. Just fantastic. So you guys didn't think of it for a long time. It kind of just developed quickly and you wrote it. And
I think it was gestating fairly early on.
Oh, okay.
But there wasn't much detail. I mean, the thought was that Hawkgirl would eventually be the betrayer.
Excellent.
But that there wasn't much more to it. Other than that, we knew, but the audience didn't know, that Hawkgirl was married and therefore had certain experiences that Wonder Woman hadn't had, and that we would write Wonder Woman as more naive in that way than Hawkgirl. Hawkgirl had been around, Wonder Woman hadn't. Even though Wonder Woman was, what, 2,000 years old?
Yeah, well, I mean, no judgment.
I love the, we always talk with the actors about the ADR that they have to do, because we had the joke going with George Newbern that he gets electrocuted in every episode. but Maria, you and Phil had some really great action. I mean, taking that, you know, going into a bar and like roughing people up for information, everything like that. I like to think that, oh, that must have been so fun. But then I picture the ADR sessions and maybe not so much. When you do scenes like that, do you enjoy the ADR aspect of it? Do you kind of like want to get it all out of the way in the beginning? What kind of is your feeling on that?
I love it. I love to do it as we're doing it. I mean, I don't have to get it over with. I enjoy it. I think it's so important, especially as these, you know, warriors that we are. And I love it. I think it's great. I remember Andrea saying, you know, picture when you're giving birth, you know, you're going to be screaming like this. They'll scream. And it was, I enjoy all that. You know, I'm a passionate extra person, so I have no problem screaming, yelling, and fighting.
And when you swing the mace, that ha, that's almost as iconic as Susan's great Hera. I mean, that's was that something that they worked out, like make a sound effect? And that, was that you, or was that in the script as a ha? How did it?
No, it came from me. If I can remember that, I mean, Andrea would definitely help us out because she's such a talented actor herself. She can do it. So there were times when we needed something more specific or different, and she would guide us towards that. But I think most of the time it came from us, right, Susan?
Well, it may have come from you. I mean, I think in the beginning, my ADR really was like, it was Andrea really holding my hand and taking me through so much of these sounds and describing every action that was going on. But then toward that third season, I was flying high myself. I was flying solo. But, I have to say, early on, you were right there with all the power watching this episode. I mean, boy, you brought it. I mean, my God.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Well, with great writing like that and a great team, it's much easier to bring it. I'm so proud of the show. I'm not kidding. Every single day, as I'm sure you too, Susan, I get stopped and asked about not only Wizards, which was a live show, not a animated
show. Not animation, yeah.
But people know that I did. They're like, oh my gosh, the mom from Wizards is Hawkgirl on the Justice League? Like, oh my God. Because I'm such a mom character on Disney. And then I get to be this other warrior chick, which is so satisfying for me as an actress, because I'm very much both, you know? So people love the show. They say, when I read the comics, I hear your guys' voices. Yeah. From the Justice League. And that, I mean, there is no greater compliment than that.
Except for hearing that we were somebody's childhood, which we get all the time as well. Yes. That you were part of my childhood. You made my childhood. And between the two, you know, there's not one of us who wouldn't take those compliments and be grateful for them, because we hear them a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I said to Stan when we interviewed him the first time, I said, Stan, do you realize how many fans are out there who know your scripts, who know the beats and the, you know, what the dialogue is? Because I think the writers are somewhat the unsung heroes in all of this, and the directors. I mean, there are a lot of expressions that we're seeing on screen that I had nothing to do with. Wonder Woman looks a certain way or is looking at a character a certain way. That's not Susan. That's
right.
You know, that's Dan Reba making that happen.
You think that Justice League fans particularly are very aware of our writers, and they all know Andrea?
Yes.
And
yes.
They care more deeply than just the performance level. They want to know how it was made and how it was figured out. And like Stan says, most of it was like drawn from the original comics that they are so familiar with more than we are. So I think that's really cool that they respect the writers and the creator and the director. They really care about the entire thing. And
absolutely.
I respect that.
And speaking of some of the writing, Stan, I was curious, one of the things that struck me in the second part of this is when they're firing up the big planet destroying Death Star cannon, because they're going to wipe out Draga's world. Just the looks and the aesthetic of it was classic Jack Kirby, in my view. When you're writing it, did you have any, like, there's a cannon that lights up, or did you kind of have any input on the style of the device itself?
No, a writer could not tell those artists, here, do it better. They know much, much better than we do. And they obviously have a much better sense of design than we do. And that explosion was really a beautiful climax to the piece. I mean, I'm sure they used every little bit of technology they had at their command to make it look really incredible. I thought it worked great.
It did.
I think I just wrote the cannon blows up.
And then you just trust them to do their work. Yeah, it was such a...
Well, no, that's the thing. You really could trust them. I worked on Spider-Man right before I came to Warner Brothers. And with them on the Spider-Man show, you had to literally tell them every punch within a fight, because that's just the style. That's the style that they worked in. They needed to know, you know, he punches him in the face or does he punch him in the chest? We have to know that. And at Warner Brothers, the style was different, which was you know, you can trust these guys, to the artists, I mean, to make something look really, really impressive. It was just a different sense of style and different way that the two different shows were run.
And I'm curious, Maria, since you had both your children during the show, do they appear, like you said your youngest watched it with you and your husband when you were viewing this episode for the rewatch, did they have any particular attachment or affinity for Justice League, or is this like, nope, it's just another project my mom did?
Oh no, they're very aware that it's very special. They've been with me when people talk to me and stop me and talk to me about it, like, all the time, and they love it themselves. We all just stop and don't move when that theme song comes on. It is so good.
Yes.
And the animation with all our characters in the opening is just perfection, excitement. Yep. It's so good. They love it. They love and they get how special. And I talk about it. I'm like, you know, why it's so special, not only because of its excellence and on every level, but because of the, you know, I was pregnant with both of them during that time. I tell them how much it was an answer to prayer, and it was not just steady work during my pregnancies. Mm-hmm. Wonderful work, excellent work. So yeah, they love the show, and they love, you know, they got to hang out with the voice actors when they come with me to the Comic Cons. So they love Susan and George.
Because I told Stan before you came on, I said, you know, we see each other. He said, when's the last time you saw Maria? And I said, what day is it? I mean, we see each other a lot because we travel together as, like, you know, George and Maria and I go to so many cons together. We all have the same booking agent, CelebWorks.
Yeah, our next one is in June in Nashville.
Oh, right, fun. In Nashville. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we see each other a lot. And the adventure continues for all of us.
Oh, totally.
We had a couple other questions come in. We have someone on Twitter at Nick Cage is amazing, says Maria rocks. Hawkgirl ended up being my favorite character and had the best story arc out of them all with that betrayal storyline. We have another Twitter user at Moses Black, I believe, if I'm reading the handle correctly. Question for Maria. What was the process and what were your inspirations for finding the voice of Hawkgirl? I know you said at the beginning that was all, you know, you brought that in from missing your Miami and your Cuban heritage, everything like that. As the story progressed and you had that betrayal moment in Starcrossed, was there anything that you drew on for inspiration there at all?
Oh, yes. Having to be sure of what my true intentions were, being misunderstood, loving these people, yet being torn by where my fidelity lies. Those are all things, you know, that we all grapple with. So I drew on my life, the good, the bad, the dysfunction, the love, you know, it was such a well-written arc that I want to say thank you to that Twitter person on Twitter, because I hear that a lot. And again, it's because of the wonderful writing that was given to me that I got to sink my teeth into. So I, like most actors, we use a lot of ourselves, and I'm not afraid to go deep into the parts that I'd rather forget. If I have to tap into it,
yeah,
I'll do it. And so I appreciate when there's that kind of courageous writing. And who doesn't want to be a hero? You know, it's what everybody really wants to be. So to get to play one is gold.
And Stan, we had a question for you from at Steely Deal, D-Y-L. With having Eric Roberts as Mongul in this, as the writer, was that someone that you kind of wanted, or was that all casting that was already done when you were brought in to do the script?
The latter. I mean, people just show up. I was surprised to see William Smith there. And Eric Roberts, I was a little worried about because he has kind of a reputation for being a wild guy. But in listening to the episode, I thought, you know, total professional, great. Cut all the little bits of contempt that Mongol had. And as I was telling you earlier, you know, it's a character that was remembered by my neighbor after 25 years. So I thought it worked out really well. I mean, almost never was there a flub on the part of Andrea in terms of casting. Always, always great people. and they benefited. The guests benefited, I think, from working with the regulars, because the regulars gave them the tone for the show and made them sure they knew that this Justice League was not Super Friends.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't think anyone said no to her. I mean, I because we had such major stars walk in those doors.
And David Paymer was the Chancellor.
Yes. Terrific. Yes. Fantastic.
He's a solid film actor. You know, you just know his face and you know his voice. Yep. And I remember seeing him in the studio. I remember having Eric Roberts right next to me and thinking, this is so cool. Our show is so cool that these solid actors that have been around for years want to do our show. It just made me even prouder. And yes, Andrea was great, because I mean, you could just, the quality in David Paymer's voice, wasn't it just perfect for the Chancellor? Right. Like, just every little casting choice was so well done.
Well, the other thing too, in terms of the actors like that coming in, the reputation gets around that they know that if Andrea's there on a show at Warner Brothers, it's going to be straightforward, it's going to be professional, and it's not going to go overtime, and it's going to be good work.
Right.
I say that because I've been in certain, I've had certain experiences, things didn't go well during voice acting. And, you know, the way you get really good actors is, you know, they know that it's going to be a very professional situation with good work being the end of it.
And a lot of them had never done voiceover and never done an animated show. And so, you know, they came in humbled by it and by the experience. It wasn't like puff, puff, you know, this is, I know how to do this. Some of them were genuinely like, okay, I'm here to play along with this group. And, you know, I think some people wanted to do it also because they wanted something to share with their children. You know, some of the actors had said, well, this is something at least my kids can watch, because the rest of my career, not so much. You know, so if you have young kids, it was like, I mean, for the most part, not too young, but for the most part, it was kid friendly.
I had a friend named Charles Napier come in to play a General Hardcastle in one of the other episodes. And the artists were kind enough to make the character look like him.
Oh, that's great.
And at the time, he did have young children, so he was able to take some of the storyboard home to show the kids.
That is so cool.
That's very neat. Do you find people, I know at the conventions, the one we just had in Burbank, I say just, it was 2 years ago now in Burbank, when we had Maria and Phil and Susan and George were all there and Dan Reba came and everything. People are bringing you Hawk Girl stuff or Wonder Woman stuff. Do you have like a Hawk Girl room? Maria, is there a little button you press in a fireplace and the bookcase slides aside and there's your...
Yeah, I'm currently in my basement where I do all self-tapes and podcasts and Zoom interviews. And yes, I have lots of Hawk Girl stuff here. And it's very cool.
It's so neat to see, because the character, again, wasn't a... I feel like she wasn't as big of a deal until Justice League. Because that's the popularity, and you see more products, you see her using more stuff, and I think it's really cool and just a testament to how good this show is.
Yeah,
and how good Maria was.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm not gonna embarrass her, but you know, the woman can act. The woman can act. I would sit in those sessions and just be blown away by her. I still am when I rewatch it now. And I think what she did with that character and the arcs that she was given, I think that's why the character became so beloved.
Absolutely. Oh, Susan, thank you. Thank you so much.
It's true. Who knew about Hawk Girl? I mean, you know, she wasn't mainstream. And now, because of the show and because of Maria's work, people know the character a lot better than they did.
So cool. So cool when I hear that. It really is incredible.
I can't remember which convention I was at, but someone had the Hawker Girl costume, and she had it where the wings, if she pressed a little button on her belt, the wings would actually come up like this. And it was so cool. And I went over, I said, can I get a picture of your costume? She goes, absolutely. And she goes, I'm just such a Justice League fan. I was like, oh, see, that's Maria's influence. That's the influence of the Bruce Timm design. And that's why she's in full Hawker Girl costume that she made herself. And it was brilliant.
So cool.
The passion.
And I love that scene where the two of you hitch a ride with the guy and you're both cramped up in the back of the spaceship. right before you gassed, and you're kind of like, your wing's in my way, and you just have that married couple of banter. It was such a great scene. I love that one.
Loved it.
Yeah, I love doing it.
With playing Hawkgirl, you know, if you're going forward, does that role inform any of your current stuff that you're doing, Maria? Like, if you do have to play a character and you've got, you kind of have that call back to that warrior aspect, or do you treat every character blank slate new? This is strictly based on the page that I'm getting for other stuff, or has Hawkgirl kind of stayed with you a little bit on your other projects?
I think once you've embodied and lived in a character, that that also becomes part of you. So yes, even though something may be fresh and new, I've lived the wonderful writing. I've seen the incredible animation of being Hawkgirl. So she is totally a part of me. And I've tapped deeper into that warrior in me and not be so helpless. So, she, as all the other parts I've been blessed to play that have affected my life, are part of me. And yes, they inform the next part that has similarities, for sure.
Was there anything about the way she looked the first time you saw her? Now, I was given a picture of Diana. It was very basic, but it was Bruce's picture of Diana when I auditioned, or when I had a callback, actually. I don't think a lot of you had callbacks. I think I was one of the few that had a callback. But did you have a sense of what she was going to look like?
Oh, gosh, I'm trying to remember, because every time I see her, I have something to say.
Oh,
she's so freaking beautiful.
She is, yes.
And I said it last night when, you know, in the opening credits, I'm like, look at our bodies. And when I was flying, I'm like, look at my body. And my older one comes from the kitchen. She goes, yes, yes, Mom, we know you are stacked. Like, I take credit for it. Look at my butt. Look at our waists, Susan.
I know. Teeny weeny. Yep.
Yeah. But I always marvel at the bodies and the strength and the, you know, the exaggerated calves and enormous. The men are like refrigerators with their chests out to here. I love it.
And I love her color. I love the colors. I love the orange and the green. Yes. I love those colors. I think they're just beautiful.
I try to wear green and orange at the Comic-Cons to beckon her image, you know. I like it when people say every now and then, well, you kind of look like her. I'm like, oh, my gosh. I have to wear a tight belt. And it's kind of cool, you know. An artist actually put my face on a Hawkgirl body, and that was really – really cool. Zoom, I think his name is. And it was really beautiful. I've tweeted the image.
Yes, I remember.
I'll tweet it again.
Yeah, I remember
because
that.
Because it was really such a wow. I marvel at the physiques all the time.
I know this is Maria and her husband's 25th anniversary, so you don't want to keep anyone too long here. We want to make sure you get out and have your celebration tonight, whatever it is your plans are. But one question I had as we're talking here, because you do embody the warrior and you've got that Hawkgirl aspect, when you're lifting something heavy off of a store shelf or when you're pushing something, do you do, ha, do you still let it fly?
Yes, I let my Hawkgirl warrior cry fly. Yeah, because I learned how to do it right, you know, because you don't want to lose your voice or get hoarse. So you learn the technique on how to yell properly and where to place it. So once you learn that, you remember it. Like I said, it's part of you. So, yeah, it's great.
Get those looks from people at Home Depot. They're like, is Hawkgirl here? Where did I just hear? And you're just lifting something.
Do you know that I was at Home Depot and I asked a guy about paint. And I said, you know, I'm painting and I don't know if the finish should be eggshell or should be a little satin or should be, because it's the bedroom and I don't want it to stain if it's flat. And he said to me, you're Hawkgirl, aren't you? And I said, oh, my gosh, you can tell just by, I felt naked. I was like, oh, my gosh, you can tell just my voice. And he goes, oh, yeah. So those are the kind of fans that blow me away. And that happened at Home Depot, which is hilarious.
See?
How long ago was this?
This was a couple years ago.
Really sensitive hearing that guy had.
I know. Right? I know. That does not happen all the time. that was a real fan that knew our voices so well. And I was talking about Paint for a good minute. So he was like, I know that voice. And I saw a click in his face and he said, you're Hawk Girl, aren't you? I was like, oh, yes, I am. How did you know? I felt like I really was her in that moment. I wish.
I know, right?
I'm like, oh, I'm just the actress, but it's kind of cool to pretend I'm Hawk Girl undercover as a mom painting her daughter's room.
You're painting John Stewart's room in the Justice League Watchtower. You're painting in a different color for him. So it's a surprise. That's why you were getting the paint. It's on a mission.
That's the backstory.
Right.
You know, Maria, in my house, when my wife hears a really bad pun on TV, she goes, you wrote that, didn't you?
It's a good thing you do these podcasts, Stan, because then you can get like, you know, you hear all the compliments that you're not getting at home.
You don't know how true that is.
Okay, well, that's another podcast, Stan. All right, so we're going to let Maria.
It will not be another podcast.
Okay, well, oh, you're right, because you're still, you want to stay married.
Let's
let Maria go so she can start the celebration of her 25th wedding anniversary. Thank you for doing this, both of you, because this is our first time having the writer and the actor on. And I'd say, you know, we have some kinks to work out with multiple guests, but we'll get there. We have about 4 seasons to go.
Right. Yeah.
And thank you so much.
Before you do take off, Maria, if you would let everyone know if they want to find out more about you, keep up with you online, social media handles, websites and things like that. And you mentioned, I know, Nashville upcoming con appearances.
That's right. Nashville. And what's the other town we're doing, Susan, right after?
Yeah, we're doing one in Virginia Beach.
That's it.
Yes, but
is that Mike Federale?
Yes.
Yeah,
so Maria and I will have more stuff as it gets closer. But Maria, for people who want to follow you on social media, how do they find you?
At Maria underscore CB for Canals Pereira. At Maria underscore CB. All my socials are at Maria underscore CB, except for TikTok. I think it's spelled out.
Very cool. Do you have share on your TikTok?
I have a little bit of share.
Okay. I'm not going to put you on the spot. I would never do that. But if you ever have the opportunity, Stan and James.
Of course I have to do it. If you bring it up, I have to do it. Ready?
Okay, because this is brilliant. Okay, go. Whenever you're ready.
Put on my, ready?
Yeah, go ahead. Whenever you're ready.
Put on my blue suede shoes and I boarded the plane. Touchdown in the land of the Delta Blues, in the middle of the pouring rain, walking in Memphis.
Love it.
Okay, is that damn good or
That's
what?
That's amazing.
Man, I am the Nile.
For those of you not...
She doesn't say tonight. She says na-night.
When I am the Nile.
And those of you listening can't see all Maria's facial expressions are so like right there with Cher. It's so dead spot on.
So for those of you attending the Nashville Comic Con, Maria will be appearing in Cher cosplay. For those of you who so look forward to that at one of the panels.
I'll be half naked.
It's been fabulous revisiting this episode with both of you. Maria, happy anniversary. To you and your husband. And thank you for taking the time out to talk with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, everyone.
Okay. Bye, Maria.
You too.
Bye.
Bye, Stan.
Bye, everyone.
Oh, wait,
thank you so much.
Thank you.
Stan,
How do people reach out to you if people want to find you? Can people find you, Stan? Or are you just like, no?
Do you want to be found?
You eschew social media.
No, actually, there is no way. Stan.Berkowitz@iCloud.com. That's it. That's my email address.
Wow.
But if this book happens, I'll have to talk to a consultant on social media to get it out there in order to publicize
it. Yes, you will.
At the moment, it's just stan.berkowitz@iCloud. But hopefully maybe 6 months from now. And then maybe I'll be seeing you at the comic conventions to publicize it.
Oh, fantastic.
That'd be awesome.
Listen, Dan Reba was the most popular one on the panel. That's all I'm going to tell you.
Really?
Yeah.
He's great.
So thank you again, both of you. And, you know, I'll see you soon, hopefully.
Thank you. Hopefully.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you both. Take care. Be well.
Bye.
What a fun show that was. Having two guests.
That's exciting, having two guests. It was a little challenging in terms of, like, you know, not wanting to talk over each other. So we can work on that skill. Because I, you know, I think I stepped on everybody, all three of you at one point or another. But I loved having the writer and the actor on. It was really sweet to hear from both of them about their experience with this episode.
Because I'm assuming it's one of those things where doing a show like this, I guess Maria probably doesn't have a lot of chance to say, hey, Stan, what about? And I feel like having the two of them on there, that they could have that repartee.
You know, people are listening to this. They can't see, but Stan listening to Maria talk about her experience and her interpretation with the character, you know, he had this huge smile on his face because we did not talk to the writers at length during the sessions. I mean, we would do a run through of the script with Andrea and Bruce in the room, and then Bruce and Andrea would step back on the other side of the glass and then we would do it. And so there wasn't like, oh, we're sitting off in a corner with Stan Berkowitz as he's telling me the different, you know, the beats in the script. That just didn't happen that much or ever. So this was a chance to have that conversation that we didn't get to have all those years ago.
And I think this might be something, not that we're going to do it every episode, but it would be fun if we do get an actor for a certain thing to maybe reach out to the writer and say, hey, by the way, I don't want to always do it. Cause like you said, it's a little more logistically challenging, but I do enjoy having that new perspective combined, you know, that it kind of gives you a fresh set of eyes once again by having both people in the same conversation.
Right. And we could do a writer director. We could do, you know, we can mix it up a little bit. I love having the writer and I love it. Because like I said, we didn't have that conversation during the show. So I'm so enjoying hearing from them and hearing the process. I mean, it was so funny when we were asking, when we were asking Dan Reba all those questions of the episode that's airing now, and he's like, sure, because he hadn't written the episode. We were asking him all these questions. So to have the writer and, you know, I mean, Stan was saying today a lot of it was from the comics, but, you know, he still has to adapt it. He still has to make that come off the page, and he does. So, you know, I really enjoy having both of them on there. It was good.
Yeah. And I wonder, wouldn't it be fun at some point to have one of the comic book writers, like if we could reach out and get Roger Stern, who wrote the kind of the War World thing, or if we reach out and get like Dan Jurgens for a Superman story that we know came out, or try to get, you know, someone who wrote Greg Rucka, who did a Wonder Woman arc. If we look and see what.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah, that's a great idea. Look at you bringing the great ideas. No, I think that's genius. And we had been talking about doing these, you know, special quote unquote episodes where it's not about an episode, a specific episode, but more about the genre or somebody connected to it in some way. And so that would be really fun. Of course, that'll push our end date to, you know, 2025
at least. Yeah. I'm thinking we'll be done by 2032.
Okay.
Maybe by the time Malia Obama is ready to run for office, because she'll be old enough.
I know.
That point, so.
it was like Stan was like, so you're on season one? And we're like, yeah. He's like, oh, okay. You've got a long run ahead of you. And it's like, yeah.
And I think once we get into the Justice League Unlimited, it will be more natural to have the comic book writers on, because Gail Simone wrote an episode and Mark DeMatteis wrote an episode.
Yep.
So it will be probably a lot easier then. But yeah, going back and like, I think the ones we talked about with Stan, the Mongul and the Draga, I believe that was Roger Stern was writing Superman at the time, if I remember correctly. So it'd be kind of fun.
I agree. So you go ahead and do that. And we'll make a plan to approach these people and ask them to come on.
And if you're liking what you hear, make sure you're subscribing. Maybe this is the first episode you've heard of this, and maybe you're new to it. We've got other episodes out. We've recorded with other actors, writers, directors on the show, and we're going to continue going forward. So if this is your first episode, welcome to it. Please subscribe. And if you haven't already done so, leave us a 5-star review, because that always helps us out in our search engine optimization.
Oh, look at you. Woohoo! Look at you, search engine optimization. Wow, you really are learning on the job.
I know.
Yeah, please do. And, you know, you can always, if you have anything you want to, you know, say to us about what you're hearing, you can always reach out to us. I'm available on social media, like practically every platform out there, at Susan Eisenberg One. And I have a website, Susan Eisenberg Voice, where you can see where I'll be appearing at conventions. And you'll also get all of the podcast episodes because they automatically stream to my website. So, yeah, if you want to, you know, reach out in any way and chat with me about anything, that's how you do it.
And social media wise, if you're keeping up with Justice League Revisited, it's at OG Justice League on Twitter. And we always try to drop, like, we had a lot of questions for both Stan and Maria on this, and we'll usually reach out before we have them on and say, hey, here's who we have. What questions do you have? And a lot of people have been responding there. So that's a great way to interact with us as we host this show.
Absolutely. So how do people get a hold of you? If, I mean, I know you haven't, you know, I mean, you haven't even given me your number yet. So I'm not even sure how comfortable you are sharing all this, but.
Well, I can give out
an email. I'm teasing.
Address,
I have his number. I have his number.
But
I know. Look at Stan. Stan gave out his email address.
I know. How about that? I mean, woof. Well, that, I guess if you didn't have any other social media contact, obviously he wants. But it sounds like he might be getting on there. So we'll see. Hopefully Stan will be joining us in the social medias, the websites and all that kind of stuff. But for me, it's at Geek to Me Radio on Twitter and Instagram. That's the name of my radio show. We host a live radio show every Sunday night, talking with people like Stan, who's been on, talking about pop culture, TV, movies, video games, and comic books. We cover it all. Susan's basically my de facto co-host on that show as well. And we are, I'm trying to think when this one will drop, we are approaching my 400th episode of Geek to Me Radio. So make sure you tune in because we've got a big announcement coming up that I'm very excited to share with everybody. And we'll be dropping that announcement on our 400th episode. And check out all the back catalog at Geek to Me Radio on wherever you get your podcast and everything like that. And on YouTube, Geek to Me Radio on YouTube as well.
Wow. Wow. You are busy. I got to say, you have a lot going on.
I don't sleep. That's the best thing. I sleep like 2 hours a night. I hang upside down like a bat. It's crazy.
I was going to say, right? All right. So is that another one in the can? We're moving through,
in the
right?
Books or in the can? Did we settle on that yet?
I think it's in the can, but please, I'm begging you, with everything that's holy, do not mention the coffee joke again, please.
All right.
Right? I asked nicely.
Yes, okay. You did. Okay, no coffee joke. I got a great clown joke I'll tell you at some point, but I'll leave the coffee joke.
Next time.
All right.
Yeah, next time.
That, we'll have to do it next time, but we do appreciate everyone listening, and...
And as I say every time, please stay tuned, because the conversation continues.